Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto, chapter 3, text 28.
Ete chansa kalapunsa.
Krishnastu
Bhagavan
Swayam.
Indrari Vyakulam Lokam. Mridayanti Yuge Yuge.
Translation: all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheist. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists.
So again and again, Krishna appears in this world in different forms. And basically for the same purpose, Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinasya Sadhuskritam Dharmasam Starpanatya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the demons. Krishna in different forms appears again and again in this material world. But in all these different forms, only part of the energy of the Lord is manifest. Only in the form of Krishna, all Krishna's personal opulence is fully manifest. He is said to be Sadaisvarya Purna, or completely full in all opulences. Aisvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yasasa Kritisriya Jnana Vairag Yuscharva Sanambhavam Itingana. Bhagavan is referring to that. It's referring to the fact that all opulences are present within the personality of Godhead. All strength, all beauty, all knowledge, all fame, all renunciation. All beauty, maybe. So in this way, we see that Krishna has all these qualities, and therefore Krishna is different from all the other incarnations. Krishna is also concerned with the well-being of his devotees, but not only of his devotees in the material world who are sincerely trying to discover the absolute truth, but Krishna is engaged in eternal pleasure pastimes with his devotees in the spiritual world. Therefore, there is no manifestation of the Supreme Lord like Krishna. The reason why I chose this particular verse is because I've been reading in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's posthumously published thesis, right, his dissertation, which he tried to finish for his PhD. And, of course, Tamal Krishna Maharaj left this world unexpectedly, very early in his life, and his work remained unfinished. But one thing he establishes as a central theme in the book is that Srila Prabhupada particularly coined that phrase, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is based on this verse, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, a verse that has been identified by Jiva Goswami, who establishes in his Sandarbhas that Krishna is Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That sentence, the Supreme Personality, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has become for us something so central in our entire spiritual life. And that is one of the points made by Tamal Krishnamurti. He calls it Prabhupada's Mahakavya, right? His major, just like Sankaracharya had his slogans, we would say in English, that Prabhupada had his slogan, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, therefore, that is very nice, and that is really Srila Prabhupada's special contribution, so much establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janmashtami is celebrated all over India, and outside of India. Wherever there are Indians, Janmashtami is observed and celebrated, and it's a big thing, Janmashtami. But then there are so many other festivals also that are also celebrated. This puja, that puja, so many celebrations. But Srila Prabhupada established that Janmashtami is the celebration. It is the celebration of all celebrations. There is no greater festival than this festival of Sri Krishna Janmashtami. Because although the Supreme Lord may manifest Himself in so many forms at so many points in time, plus He may expand Himself in His energies and so on, still, only very rarely does Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Himself appear in this world. It is said that in each cycle of four yugas is known as one Divya Yuga, and that within such Divya Yuga, or within such cycle of four yugas, there are 10 incarnations of the Supreme Lord, the Das Avatar, that appear. Krishna, He appears only once in a day of Brahma, which means only once in a thousands of Divya Yugas. So Krishna also is a manifestation of the Supreme Lord, but He appears rarely. But Krishna is the Adipurush, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears displaying all His transcendental opulence, not only in His personal qualities, but also in His pastimes. So Krishna performs the activities of the spiritual world also here in this planet. Lord Ramachandra is almost Krishna. And Lord Ramachandra, when he appears in this world, is basically giving the perfect example. There is practically no better example than Lord Ramachandra, who always, in every situation, is following the principles of Dharma. Even when it hurts himself, even to an extreme, when we see that in the whole Ramayana, Lord Ramachandra goes to all this trouble to somehow or other recover Sita. And after great troubles and huge battle and so many people killed, finally Sita is freed from captivity, and Ramachandra and Sita are reunited. And at that time, Lord Ramachandra says to Sita, "You can go." Not because that's what he desired, but because Dharma dictates that a woman who has stayed in the house of another man for the night cannot be taken back. So Sita then is passing a test by entering into fire and coming out unharmed, and Ramachandra then takes her back. But later on, when he is the crowned king in Ayodhya, and when some citizens are critical and are saying that, are still questioning how could the king take her back, then Lord Ramachandra chooses for duty, dharma, and he gives up Sita.
So, in the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, Dharma stands out as supreme. But in the pastimes of Krishna, it's not always the case. Krishna surely is establishing the principles of religion. Dharma samsnarpanantaya. Surely. Krishna is acting like that, very exemplary. Just yesterday, I shortly mentioned how Krishna is performing his daily activities and is first seeing auspicious things, and then he gives many cows and charities to the brahmanas and things like this. Krishna is perfectly establishing principles of religion in all respects. But then Krishna transcends that. Krishna steals. He's a thief, which is considered abominable, but not when Krishna is stealing. When Krishna is stealing, it is a very good thing. The residents of Vrindavan, the elderly gopis, are coming to complain to Yasoda, and they explain how there's nothing they can do to stop Krishna. They say that he's not just innocently stealing, he's very organized about it. He has spies. He has a whole gang, actually. And he has spies who are going to scout out the possibilities. And when they've identified where to strike and how to get in and so on, then nothing can stop him. Even when they hang the pots on the ceiling, Krishna somehow or other stands on the shoulders of the coward boys and makes a tower and manages to reach the pots. He is very expert also in poking holes with sticks in clay pots. Somehow or other, in this way, Krishna cannot be stopped. Even when they are hiding the pots in a dark room, by his jewels he can see, by his own effulgence he can see. In this way, no obstacle seems to be too great. And Mother Yasoda is like, well, what to do? He's very hungry. And then the gopis say, no, he's not hungry at all. He's not hungry because he's not even eating it. He feeds it to the monkeys. And Krishna says, what can I do? They've done such nice service for me. I have to reciprocate with these monkeys. In a previous life, as Lord Ramachandra, the monkeys did everything. So Krishna has a weak spot for the monkeys, and due to that service, and gives them abundantly butter, yogurt, whatever they like. So all these things are going on. Krishna is stealing. That is glorified. So then Mother Yasoda says to these elderly gopis, well, why don't you just capture him? And they say, no, he's too smart. We can't. Then Mother Yasoda suggests, all right, we will lock up Krishna in the house. But then his gopis say, no, don't do that. Then you will not see him anymore. And all his pastimes. So actually, they're enjoying, they're hoping that Krishna will come to their house to steal. So Krishna's stealing is giving great pleasure to his devotees. But from a material point of view, it's immoral. So Krishna is in that way beyond mundane morality. Krishna is also maintaining relationships later when he's grown up, with gopis who are married. Krishna is standing at Vamsivad playing his flute and attracting by this sound all the gopis, and the gopis are already married. So that is inconceivable in a way. Of course, we understand that whatever is going on has nothing to do with mundane morality.
nothing to do with the standards of Vedic culture, that it has everything to do with the pure love of the devotees, that the devotees feel for Krishna, and the pure love that Krishna feels for his devotees. The gopis being completely dedicated in devotional service to Krishna are always thinking of Krishna, can never ever forget Krishna for a moment. I was once reading in Nectar of Devotion how it said that the gopis, they were not satisfied with the Creator, Lord Brahma, for creating the eyelid which blinks, right? So that for a moment they could not see Krishna. Because the gopis, they always want to see Krishna. Actually, on that particular day, I had checked in for a flight, and they asked me what seat I wanted, aisle seat or a window seat, and it was a beautiful day, and we were going to fly over mountains and things, so I said, window seat, yes? And so I had a window seat. And then, as I was looking out of the window, I was reading in the Nectar of Devotion that the gopis had no interest to see anything else but Krishna. And it's like, okay, here I am with my window seat. So, what to say? The gopis were such devotees. And when Krishna blew his flute at Bansibat and attracted them in the dead of night, the gopis spontaneously came to Krishna. They heard Krishna pouring out his heart into that flute play. And they could hear his loving nature in that flute play. And therefore it was irresistible. It called them, and they had to go. In doing so, they broke all social convention, and they gave up their respectability. After that, they had nothing to return to. So we see that the gopis surrendered like that. And Krishna tested them. No, better you go back. Young girls alone in the night, very dangerous. Better you go back home. It's like, you called us here, now you sent us back home. So the interesting part of this is that the gopis were completely ready to give up anything, even their social prestige. They were ready to give it up for Krishna. Nothing was important for them. Not what people would think, not the honor that they would get in society. No, only Krishna was of interest to them. So in this way we see that the pastimes of Krishna, which from a more mundane moral point of view look inappropriate, that they are actually perfect from a transcendental platform, because the center of Krishna's pastimes is love, loving devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam points that out. Sabai pumso paru dharmo yato bhaktira doksaje aitiki apatiyata iyatma supersedati. That unalloyed pure devotional service to Krishna, that is the topmost, that is the greatest experience. So the pure devotional service which exists in relation to Krishna is incomparable. The devotees of Krishna are giving up everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And they do so without expecting anything in return. So much worship is there of so many deities. But nowhere is this pure devotional service found, as exists between Krishna and his devotees. And it is mutual. Sadhanam vidyan mayan
sadavodiyam ayam sadanandiyam tvaham matanyate na ja nati naham tebya mana arti.
Krishna is just as attached to his devotees as the devotees are attached to Krishna. And that is fully expressed. It may be there also in other incarnations. It may also be that other manifestations of the Lord are full of love and mercy towards their devotees. But it's not fully expressed. It's always bound. The worship is bound by rules of formality. And each are playing their part. The Supreme Lord, the devotee, is acting out the role of the devotee. But in relationship to Krishna, these things are forgotten. Just like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that devotees, they will not step on Govardhan, because Lord Chaitanya never stepped on Govardhan. Said the only one who can step on Govardhan are those who are fully realized in Sakya Ras, or in the relationship of friendship with Krishna. They can stand on Govardhan because they stand on Krishna's shoulders, right? So that's okay. These coward boys, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, they can step on Govardhan. But Govardhan is Krishna, so we don't step on Govardhan. But the coward boys can do, because they step on Krishna also. They stand on his shoulders. That's all right. So in this way, we can see how the coward boys are no longer in that mood of respect towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are engaged in always in their transcendental play and competition with Krishna, always thinking of Krishna. And this is the most pleasing to Krishna, and also the most pleasing to the devotee. Therefore, pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the most satisfying activity, the most wonderful activity. There is nothing else that compares, neither in this world nor in the next. Therefore, we are interested in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now we see that Krishna originally appears in Mathura. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, we find a description about a king named Devamida. And it said that this king, he is actually the origin of the parents of Krishna. Because we see that in the line of Devamida comes... Devamida had several wives. And he had one of them was a Vaishya wife. He also had proper Kshatriya wife. So from his Kshatriya wife, he begot a son named Vasudev. And from his Vaishya wife, he got a son named... From his Kshatriya wife, he got a son named Sura. And Sura begot Vasudev. From the Vaishya wife, he got a son named Parjanya. And Parjanya had several sons. And one of them was Nanda Maharaj. So we see that they are in the same family lineage, actually, coming back to King Devamida, who married a Kshatriya and a Vaishya wife. So there was an intimate relationship between Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj, more than friendship, but actually a family connection. It said that Maharaj Ugrasena, he was very pleased with Parjanya, and he therefore anointed Parjanya with tilak, which established him as the king of the cowherds. So Parjanya was the king of the cowherds, and in due course of time, Parjanya gave this position to his eldest son, whose name was Upananda. But amongst Parjanya's five sons, Nanda Maharaj was extremely outstanding and qualified. And everyone, therefore, was considering him the senior most, and Upananda also. So Upananda actually called himself Upananda. Apparently he gave that name to himself, because basically it means the little brother, Upananda, although he was the elder one. So he called himself Upananda and gave the throne to his younger brother, Nanda. So in that way, Nanda Maharaj became the king of the cowherds. We see that both Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, along with their wives, in their previous life, performed austerities for the Supreme Lord to become their son. Sutapa and Prishni were performing austerities and with a desire for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become their son. And Drona and Dara, who later became Nanda and Yasoda, had also performed austerities. So in this way, Vasudev and Devaki had performed austerities in a previous life, and Nanda and Yasoda also had performed austerities in a previous life to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their son. We then see that Krishna, in due course of time, appeared as the son of Vasudev and Devaki. At that time, Kamsa had become extremely powerful. Kamsa, who was the son of Ugrasena and Padmavati, whereas Devaki is described to be the daughter of Devaka. Yeah? So, although Kamsa is described as a sister, it is the Indian definition of sister, where cousins and so on are also referred to as sister. It's my sister. So Kamsa was driving the chariot on the occasion of the wedding of his sister. Actually, they were not brother and sister directly. It is said that Kamsa was the son of Ugrasena and Padmavati. Of course, it is surprising that a pious king like Ugrasena would have such a son and such a demon as Kamsa. That's surprising. And some little light is shed on this matter in the Harivamsa. In the Harivamsa, it is like a supplement which written by Vyasadeva after he finished the Mahabharata, where he particularly follows the family lineage of Lord Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he describes how actually Padmavati was from a mountain kingdom originally. And she stayed after her marriage with her husband, but naturally sometimes she would go home to her maternal home. So she was visiting her father's home, and she was somewhere in the mountains on a field along with her associates, some maidservants and so on. And just at that time, a demon, a Rakshasa, was flying by on some vehicle in the sky. And he saw this beautiful young lady. Immediately, he was extremely attracted to her. Although she was wearing the dot and the kumkum, he didn't care about such futilities. And that really had nothing to do with the matter. He desired this woman. And since Rakshasas are very tricky and possess mystic power, he first
inquired who this lady was and then found out that she was the wife of Ugrasena. And next moment, minutes later, Ugrasena appeared there. And Padmavati was very surprised, and Ugrasena came and met her there and said that, "I could not bear the separation from you." And Padmavati was over the moon, and right. And then, you know, from one thing came another. It was so romantic, and he just embraced her right there on the spot, and so on and so. And then, but then in that embrace, she realized that this was not Ugrasena. But it was too late by then, because his touch was different. But too late, she had conceived. And then she said, Who are you? So he said, "I am Drumila." Right? A powerful Raksasa, he was very upset, "You have cheated me." He said, "Anyway, you're lucky to have a son from me instead of some weak human being." So in this way we find a description about the origin of Kamsa and how Kamsa became so powerful. Srila Prabhupada explains how Kamsa was doing everything to solidify his kingdom. Yeah. At one point, Kamsa took over the throne, captured the throne from his elderly father and locked him up. And at that time, Kamsa set himself on the throne. It is said that that was not an ordinary throne, because Kamsa was so powerful that he had conquered. He had many allies. Prabhupada said he occupied various kingdoms that were surrounding his own kingdoms. And many kings went in hiding, out of fear of Kamsa, who was ruthlessly killing left and right and occupying others' land. Kamsa had many demoniac allies. It is said that all these allies, such as Putana, such as Kesi, such as Agasura, Dainakasura, and all these powerful demons had become Kamsa's allies, that Kamsa had personally conquered. He had personally conquered. He had challenged all of these personalities for battle. And he had defeated each of them in battle. He had fought with Agasura, who had taken that form of the big snake. And somehow or other, Kamsa had also taken a bigger form, and he had wrapped himself around the neck of Agasura and grabbed his ankles and pulled tight, and he had practically strangled Agasura in that way, to a point where Agasura said, "Mercy, mercy, mercy, all right, then you must become my servant." And in this way, it is described that Kamsa had personally defeated all these personalities. This is from the Garga Samhita, a book that was endorsed by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as bona fide. So then, you know, it is said in the Garga Samhita that once Jarasandha, who was a very powerful emperor, like on the more on the eastern side, who was also having a great kingdom, that once a powerful elephant from the army of Jarasandha had broken loose. This elephant was always drunk, and so was the Mahout, the caretaker of the elephant. He was also always drunk, and he used to feed alcohol to this elephant. So this elephant then broke loose. The name of the elephant, Kuvalaya, Deepa. This elephant broke loose from his caretaker and went on a rampage, and went into the city of Mathura, the capital of Kamsa. Kamsa, who had even conquered Indra and had taken the throne from Indra, was seated in his opulent city on the throne of Indra, and suddenly this wild elephant is in the city, breaking the whole city. So Kamsa heard about it, immediately came out, grabbed that elephant, and threw him away a distance of 80 yojanas. One yojana being 8 miles times 80, so a very long distance. So when Jarasandha found out about this, he was very impressed. He said, "Oh, who did this? This person will be a suitable match for my daughter." Yes. So in this way, Kamsa became the son-in-law of Jarasandha. And as a wedding gift, he gave him many, many things, and one of the things he gave him was the elephant, Kugliyadipa. Anyway, he had him in chains and this, that. So, yes, so all this is showing that Kamsa was extraordinarily powerful, extremely powerful. Very much so. And I'm jumping a little bit, you know, like with my story from two different books. So I'll jump one moment to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, because there's some information about Padmavati, about the mother of Kamsa. It's also interesting, because it is described that Krishna at that time is living in Dwarka, and Krishna has a headache. And everyone's talking about Krishna's headache, and they're quiet. But then they find, then Satyabhama speaks up and says, it's not a headache at all. Everybody knows what it really is. Krishna is overwhelmed by separation from the residents of Vrindavan. And everyone says, Satyabhama, please, please. Satyabhama is not to be stopped. And so then they all begin to speak about this separation that Krishna feels. And then Padmavati, the mother of Kamsa, she's also staying there, but she's like, she's still there after Kamsa's been killed. But she's really a case, you know. I mean, she's not like completely clear in the head, right? And she's going, of course, you know. Of course, Krishna never wants to go back to Vrindavan. The way they treated him, yes. And they just, like, you know, completely neglected him. And it's no wonder that he never wants to go back there, and that he just stays here in Dwarka. They just treated him like an ordinary cowherd boy, right? Although he's from a royal family, you know, made him work and milk the cows, and everyone says, shut up, Bhavati, please, you know. This old senile woman. So, in this, of course, not to be down on anyone in particular, but that's sort of the mood, you know, that they give to Satyabhama, Padmavati, the mother of Kamsa. Kamsa is extremely oppressive, and we see that Krishna, of course, is there to, as the prophecy says, to kill Kamsa, and that is a great pastime. And what shall I say? Krishna comes there into the wrestling arena, and Krishna is perceived differently by all the people who are sitting there. And it's a very important point that although Krishna was on the planet, that not everyone could recognize him for who he was. That was the interesting part. So that wrestling arena is basically describing how all the different personalities were seated there and were seeing Krishna in a different way. It is said that the ladies of Mathura, they saw him as Cupid personified. It is said that the
the residents of Vrindavan saw him as their family member. It is said yogis, they saw him as Paramatma. It is said that the wrestlers, they saw him as powerful as a thunderbolt that could crush their limbs. And Kamsa saw him as death personified. And those whose heart was like stone saw him like stone. So in this way, different perceptions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's interesting. Although Krishna was personally present on the planet, not everyone could recognize him. Still, only the devotees could recognize him. And only to the degree that one had surrendered to Krishna could one perceive Krishna. Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstateya vajami aham. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So even then, Krishna was not to be perceived just automatically. Now he's on the planet, everyone could see. No. Avajanati mamuda, and the materialists, the fools, they could not see. They could not see. Even when being presented with Krishna in person, they still could not see. Shishupal could not see. He could not see. This Krishna is getting so much respect here. This Rajasuya sacrifice is just outrageous. And actually, you know what I mean? I am just as rich as he is. What he has, I have. You know what I mean? Seriously. I, Sishupal, have everything that he also has. Many great personalities had come to the Yajna, even the demigods, Shiva, Brahma, they could have been respected as the senior most, but then this upstart of all people, Sahadev, one of the younger Pandavas, a little upstart, he publicly begins to glorify Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and Krishna has the arrogance to accept it. Instead of humbly saying, I am no one, glorify Shiva, glorify Brahma, Krishna just accepted this glorification. It's outrageous. Outrageous. And nobody did anything. None of the seniors actually spoke up. Not peacefully. No one. Shishupala finally said, all right, if nobody will do anything, then I will have to do it. He was ready to stand up, and it started to look like the whole yajna would be spoiled by blood. Because it is said that when there is blood during a sacrificial arena, then it has become contaminated and the yajna cannot be performed. So therefore Krishna saw the emergency arising. Krishna was not interested to kill Shishupala, it says, but the thing was that other kings were getting ready to take action against Shishupala, and it's like the whole yajna was going to turn into a big fight, and certainly there would be bloodshed. Therefore, Krishna finally killed Shishupala with his Sudarshan Chakra, and the way he cut so fast, it said that there was not even a drop of blood spilled. So his head was cut, but no blood spilled. So the Rajasuya yajna still went on. Anyway, so we can see that even in Krishna's presence, not everyone could appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this will always be the case. This was even the case. Even the case when Krishna was personally present. There were those who could not recognize him. And there will also now be those who will not be able to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even although the scriptures proclaim it, even although Srimad Bhagavatam establishes it without any, beyond a doubt, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, but they'll find some way, they'll try and find a way to somehow or other deny Krishna's supremacy. Kamsa lived in great fear of Krishna. There's a passage in the Nectar of Devotion which I like very much. I call it Kamsa's moment of doubt. And basically it is describing how Kamsa was seated on his throne and saying to himself, he said, what's Krishna going to do to me? What's he going to do to me? There's nothing he can do to me because I have many powerful allies. And most powerful of all of them is Kesi. So, what's Krishna going to do when Kesi is protecting me? Just then, a messenger came into Kamsa's court. Your Majesty, a tragedy, a disaster. Kamsa says, no. It can't be. Your Majesty, Kesi has been killed. No. Not Kesi. No. He is too powerful. It's incredible. Now he has even killed Kesi. What to do? Maybe I should just surrender to him. How could I do that? What would people say? Now, maybe then instead, I should go to Vrindavan and torture the residents of Vrindavan. But how can I go? How can I leave the palace when he can kill me any moment? No, I cannot go. So, I'll just stay here and send my powerful representatives. So, Kamsa, living in fear, had a moment of doubt. Maybe I should surrender. So it's very nice that Kamsa was a prototype of the demoniac mentality and also considered for a moment to surrender to Krishna. Because this is inherent in every living being. And therefore, even demons are not doomed to be demons forever. Even demons can become devotees. So that's hopeful for us. It's one of those things that are very encouraging. Yeah? That even a demon can have a change of heart. It is possible. So, in this way, we too can become devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, I guess in this talk, we have to come to the point where Krishna kills Kamsa. It's inevitable. I guess we can't go through the day, waiting for this thing to happen. I think we may as well get it over and done with now in the morning, so that we can go on and meditate on more auspicious things than Kamsa. Forget about Kamsa. Kamsa, soon he will be dead. Yes. It happened very quickly. There was, of course, first that elephant that had been put in the way there, and Krishna dealt with him very expertly. First, he played with him a bit. When the elephant tried to to pierce him with his tusk, Krishna ran between his legs, and the elephant was looking anyway. Krishna then pulled his tail and pulled him back quite some distance. And then finally, Krishna, he killed that elephant. First he tripped him, which also was an interesting detail. Put out his foot in the elephant. I mean, I wouldn't put my foot under an elephant's foot. I don't know if any of you would try that. I wouldn't. But Krishna just held out his lotus foot and the elephant tripped. And then Krishna smashed him and
pull out his trunks, and one of the trunk, Balaram got another one, and they came with these trunks into the wrestling arena, which sort of looked impressive. So, well dressed also, as they picked up some good clothes on the way, and then ready to deal with these wrestlers. I mean, these wrestlers, I don't know if they took steroids or all these things, you know, but they sure enough, you know, I suspect they did, because they had the size of these typical kind of monsters, you know, with too much muscle and too much something like Hulk, you know, some horrible monsters, Chanura and Mustika, right? And everyone, all the ladies in the wrestling arena, they thought this is unfair. There was an outcry. No, how can these boys, you know, fight in such an unfair competition against such monsters of wrestlers? And Kamsa simply said that. And then Krishna even said it himself. He said that, like, we, of course, are cowherd boys, and we are obedient to the king, so we are here, and we like to wrestle, but we just do it as a play amongst boys, you know. We are certainly no match for these powerful wrestlers. And everyone says, yes, this is right, it's not fair. But then Kamsa said, well, you just killed an elephant on the way, and it isn't fair, it's toxic, so you are suitable matches, you know. Anyway, then it started, and it was a huge, huge fight. The rest, Balaram fought Mustika, Krishna fought with Chanura. They locked hand in hand, they pulled, they pushed, they were striking each other with both fists and things like this. It was inconceivable. But at one point, Krishna just hit Chanura on the head, and the eyes of Chanura just popped out of his sockets and were dangling like that. Yeah. That's also his Hariwamsa. And so in this way, the wrestlers were defeated. And Kamsa was totally alert and shocked. So Kamsa, immediately after they had defeated the wrestlers, called out, "Arrest them! Arrest him! Arrest him!" He told the royal guard to arrest Krishna, to arrest all these cowherd men, everyone, right? And he's like, just called for the royal guard. But Krishna jumped over the royal guard, right, and landed on the raised platform where Kamsa was seated. But Kamsa was ready, completely ready, alert, always ready, just, you know, ready for death any moment, right? And therefore Kamsa was there immediately with his sword, right? Ready, ready for action. But Krishna just ducked his sword, knocked the crown of Kamsa's head, and just hit him, like gave him a full blow with his fist. And that was it. I mean, Kamsa just fell. He fell off the platform onto the ground. So everyone thought, like, wow, knockout in the first round. But that's what they thought it was, knockout. They thought, he's knockout, that's all. In a moment, Kamsa will come to his senses, and then the real fight will begin. Because Kamsa, you know, now this Krishna has really brought some doom upon himself, you know. I mean, he has punched the king. The king will punish him for this. Just wait, you know. He will retaliate. But no, Kamsa did not retaliate at all. He was just knocked out, and Krishna basically then punched Kamsa a little more. But to show that Kamsa was really dead, he began to drag the body of Kamsa through the arena. And then everyone started to think, like, gosh, you know? Huh? I mean, he's not coming back to his consciousness. I mean, he looks pretty finished, actually. He looks kind of dead. And then everyone suddenly realized, Kamsa is dead. So yeah, that was a big thing, you know.
comes to us dead.
So, well, then, of course, you know, it's the general practice that one who is, who defeats the king has to become the king. Yeah. But Krishna said, no. He couldn't do that because there was some curse that the Yadus couldn't be the kings. So he then arranged that Maharaj Ugrasena was reinstated, because he pointed out actually Kamsa was not the king. He was not the king. Maharaj Ugrasena is still alive, and actually he is the ruler. He is the king. So there's no question of me becoming king. Ugrasena is king. And as long as he's present, he will remain as the king. So that was taken care of. And then Krishna was ready to go back to Vrindavan. Now I'm jumping to the Gopal Champu from Jiva Goswami. So I'm jumping from book to book. And in the Gopal Champu, then it says that, so Kamsa was killed. And okay. Krishna said, I've done it now. I've done what I had to do. I killed Kamsa, so I'm going back to Vrindavan. I'm going back. And then they said, wait a minute. Where do you think you're going? How can you leave your father and your mother? Yes, that's right. Krishna says, how can I leave my father and my mother? Nandini Yasoda, they're in Vrindavan. How can I leave them? I'm going home. So no, wait a minute. What did that celestial voice say? It said that the son of Vasudev and Devaki would be the one to kill Kamsa. So, now it's really clear whose son you are. Oh yes. And you cannot go. You put old Ugrasena on the throne. First you kill Kamsa, and then you think you can put an old man on the throne. And we all know that Kamsa have many allies everywhere. And what do you think is they're going to do that is going to sit? No, they're all going to come here. And they're going to fight. And then Ugrasena will have to fight. He's old. What can he do? Oh no. And your father and mother are also old. You'll have to stay here to protect your parents. And suddenly Krishna said, oh no, oh God, this celestial voice, I'm the eighth son of Vasudeva and Devaki, and now what am I going to do? And I have to. And he said to the residents of Vrindavan, what to do, I'll have to stay here a bit, but you go ahead, he said to Nanda Maharaj, you go ahead, I'll be right there, and I just have to kill a few more demons. And this line, I just have to kill a few more demons, was a line that Krishna employed again and again whenever he would ask, when are you actually coming back? Well, just a few more demons, and then still a few more. And so Krishna stayed in Mathura to kill just a few more demons. Of course, many things happened, and I want to bring it to a conclusion, but I just want just one more point. We all remember how Vasudev took Krishna out of the palace to Vrindavan and exchanged the boy with the daughter that had been born from Yasoda, and then took that daughter back to the palace, and then Kamsa smashed the daughter, and the daughter turned into Durga and said, the one who will kill you is already born somewhere else. Do you remember? Lagu Bhagavatamrita gives a little more information. It says, actually, Yasoda did not just have a daughter. Yasoda had twins, a boy and a girl. And then Krishna also took birth from Yasoda. So Krishna appeared in Mathura with four arms and helmet and so on. And then Devaki said, Supreme, oh my Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Now you have appeared as my son, but surely Kamsa will come and kill you. Please, please, take the form of a child so that you be hidden.
So somehow or other Krishna appeared twice. He appeared once as the son of Devaki and once as the son of Nanda and Yasoda. Lagu Bhagavatam Rita. So that's interesting. That is the hidden appearance of Krishna. Krishna appearing in Vrindavan. And then when Vasudeva exchanged these the children, actually it is said that the two boys became one. They became one. And that boy stayed behind. And the girl was taken. Anyway, later, Krishna was just still killing demons. They just didn't come back to Mathura. And they kept waiting back to Vrindavan. And they waited and waited and waited, but he never came back. His parents were going mad, mad from separation. It said then there was this eclipse and there was a big ceremony to be performed in Kurukshetra because it was a holy place. So Vasudeva had organized for some yajna, Gopal Champu explains. And it says then, during this yajna, the residents of Vrindavan, they also went there. Everyone went there. And they went to see Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj was Vasudev with various brahmanas was performing different rituals as part of the sacrifice. And then, at one point, Nanda Maharaj arrived. So Krishna was with Vasudev. And when Krishna saw Nanda Maharaj, he was becoming so emotional. He was just becoming so overwhelmed with affection for Nanda Maharaj that Vasudev was shocked. He had never seen Krishna like that. And in his mind, he's thinking like, but he doesn't even show so much affection for me, his own father. Then he said out loud, he rationalized it and said out loud, actually it's not surprising that Krishna shows so much affection for Nanda Maharaj, although he's not his real father. After all, he spent a long time with them in Vrindavan. In this way he tried to rationalize it, but the fact was, Krishna had more love for Nanda Maharaj than he had for Vasudeva. Because the quality of Nanda Maharaj's love was greater than the quality of the love of Vasudeva. When Vasudeva was released after Kamsa was killed, then they stood in front of Krishna and Balaram, and then instead of embracing their sons, they recognized them as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that interfered with the parental mood. But Nanda and Yasoda, they were just, no matter what, always remembering, Krishna is my son. The residents of Vrindavan once said to Nanda Maharaj, "Oh Nanda Maharaj, your son Krishna is so wonderful." It's this chapter called Wonderful Krishna. And they're all describing the glories of Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj explains, he said, "My son, wonderful. What do you mean my son is wonderful? He's a problem child. He said, this boy, his senses are totally uncontrolled. He's so lusty. If you know what we feed him at home, you know, he eats and eats so many things. And then he eats with the neighbors as well. And then still he's stealing. We give him the best. Still he's stealing. No, this boy, he's a problem child. And it's my duty as his father to correct him. Yes, it's my duty. I will not let him get away with it. I will chastise him and correct him. Problem child." So Nanda Maharaj was completely absorbed in this mood that Krishna was his son. Whereas Vasudev sometimes was thinking of Krishna as his son, and sometimes was thinking
as Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Krishna became more captured by the love of Nanda Maharaj than by the love of Vasudeva.
When Devaki heard that Krishna had brought back the dead son of his teacher, then she asked that Krishna also would bring back her dead children, her dead sons. Then Jiva Goswami in his Gopal Champu has some narrators who are speaking, and they're commenting, and they're saying, and what was the point? What was the point for her to ask for these sons to be revived when Krishna and Balaram were her sons? What more could she desire?
In this way. And when Vasudev was performing his sacrifice in Kurukshetra, at one point he had to leave Krishna. He had to leave Krishna because the Brahmanas were calling him that he had to come for some ritual to create auspiciousness. And again, these narrators of Jiva Goswami say, but what auspiciousness was there when he was with Krishna? Nanda Maharaj didn't leave for anything because all auspiciousness had been attained. He was with Krishna. He didn't care about eclipses or anything. He was with Krishna. In this way, we can see how Krishna simultaneously has two sets of parents, but that the mood of the residents of Vrindavan is a mood where, is really the mood, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. He is really everything. And therefore, that Krishna becomes more captured by them, because this is the secret. That the devotee can capture Krishna by love. And therefore, the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are considered the topmost. And in this way, we have learned from Srila Prabhupada not only that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also how He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, I'll stop with that. Any questions, any comments? Yeah.
Is it maybe described in any of the books that I mentioned, that how is it possible that Madhya Shoda was alone while she gave birth to Lord Bhagavad Gita? She was very tired and fell asleep.
Yeah.
She didn't know if it's a boy or girl.
Yeah.
She was not confused in the morning. Right?
Yeah. No detail is mentioned why. It's just, of course, we understand that it was Yoga Maya somehow or other. We're making that arrangement, but she was alone. It was in the night. Maybe it came unexpected and very fast. Sometimes childbirth happens very fast. You hear these stories of ladies who give birth in the car on the way to the hospital. Yeah? I mean, it happens so fast, and others it takes a long time. So maybe it happened very fast. But she it happened in the night. So somehow or other, she was alone and had this... these twins, but from exhaustion, she was so exhausted that she didn't even know it, that they were twins. That part you mentioned. There's no, I have not read any detail about that. Guess we'll take a break from this, which of course. What to do, but somehow or other we'll continue to spend the day in hearing and chanting and serving Krishna and cooking for Krishna or other services for Krishna, and then tonight we'll continue to to celebrate publicly Sri Krishna Janmashtami. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Maha Mahotsav Ki Jai. Hari Nam Sankirtan Yajna Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.